Welcome to the Flame Podcast, spreading truth like wildfire with your flamethrowers Anna Kane and Nicole Orozco on a mission to set the captives free. Now here they are, your hosts.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode number 19. We have a great show lined up for you once again, and for more information about the Flame Podcast and the Flame Paper, make sure to visit us at theflameusa.com. Don't forget to subscribe.
21,000 copies.
25,000
copies
to save America. And also get the show at the Podomatic.com website or download the Podomatic app so you won't miss a single episode. I have so many people saying, I didn't know that person was on your show. I didn't know that person was on your show. Well, get the Podomatic app and you will. So we always start out the show with the Watchman on the Wall, where we cover the latest events and happenings. So again, and I think we'll do this forever, the Reawaken America Tour is coming to Rochester, New York, August 12th and 13th. But what we're mostly excited for is to announce the tour is coming to the Washington-Idaho border on September 16th and 17th. We'll have a media table, we'll have vendor, you know, we'll have newspapers all over that place. And so get your tickets now. They do sell out quick, and you could get 10% off. Do it now with the promo code FLAME, F-L-A-M-E. And you can also call 918-851-0102 or go to timetofreeamerica.com and put in FLAME promo code, F-L-A-M-E. Ohio Brett is coming down to Washington on August 16th and 17th. We still have to, you know, get the venue to be determined, you know, all of that good stuff.
God'll plan that. Funny thing, last night, I just got to give a shout out to his daughter. 2 o'clock in the morning, he was getting in his car in Milwaukee, heading out west, he said, and he sent me a video of his daughter singing. And I'm telling you, it was so amazing. It made my whole night. He's like, sorry, it's so late. I'm just getting in the car. I'm like, oh, but no way, brother. You can call me anytime or text me anytime with music like this.
That is so cool. Beautiful. Cool. Yeah, he's a warrior. So, you know, and there's a lot of revivals coming. You know, the Finding with Bill Johnson, Heidi Baker is coming to Bothell on the 18th and 20th. I know you could go to thefinding.com to find out more information. You know, Pursuits Northwest is constantly doing something. The House Church, Jake's House, and Reset Church. I mean, those are all the biggies of what's going on here.
Yeah, we got to give a shout out also to all the people that came to the tent revivals this last week. That was pretty amazing. God is definitely touching down and touching Marysville, I feel like, in general. So let's hope for more tent events through the summer in other cities.
And states, you know, it's not just here, but they're happening everywhere. I know that Louisiana, Jill Noble had that Louisiana Purchase Walk in Missouri. So that happened too on the 23rd. But we're still looking. Okay. If I was a church, which I am in a way, you know, we're a nonprofit, right?
Yeah.
We talk about God. You know, I know we're not all gathering, but we are on
a podcast.
We don't
talk about God. We're warriors for God.
But if I was to do, you know, one of those announcements, you walk in and they have that video board, and I would say, use your gifts and talents for the flame. Currently, we're looking for state coordinators, social media gurus, on-the-ground reporters, and a new show host. Come on now. We have some opportunities that I can't even say right now.
You know, I think we have more opportunities than maybe we let people be aware of, because I do want the listeners to know and, you know, make sure you're sharing the podcast, because at the end of the day, we all need, it's the see something, say something, right? So we all are here to be reporters. So if you're seeing something, make sure you're recording it, getting it to us. If you know of somebody that, you know, has an amazing story, make sure it's getting to us. The paper and the podcast really is, it's not about Nicole and I. It's not just about the flame. It's about the people. Or Steve, right? It's about the people. It's about you guys. I know this week, this week in particular, we've heard a lot of candidates speaking because we're in the primaries. And one of the common themes is, you know, how mainstream media is destroying America. And, you know, as that's true, what are we doing about it?
We're doing what something.
Are we, No. I mean, in general, like if
people.
If we, the people, know that mainstream media is the problem, then why are we not giving and creating something new? So if you haven't been volunteering with The Flame, or you don't know what The Flame is, or you haven't subscribed and been giving papers out to your community, make sure you're getting on board, because really we can be the change. Because the things that mainstream media doesn't want to cover and wants to censor, we want to talk about.
Like this. Okay, so if you're watching MSNBC or CNN, you're going to see that Deborah Birx wrote a book.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see she wrote a book, and they're going to kind of talk it up. But seriously, Birx lied, people died. And that's that's our headline on August. And it goes in her book excerpts.
Yep.
And shows where she just kind of was like, oh, I'm going to say 15 days to slow the spread. I know we want a lockdown, is what she was thinking.
Yes.
But I know the American public won't go for a lockdown. So I'm going to just start with 15 days and figure out how to spin this so we could get in lockdown mode. Okay, think about this. Think about what those lockdowns did, our supply chain. When you walk in the supermarket and you're not seeing food on the shelves, that's Deborah Birx. That's Fauci. Those are the people that did that. When you almost got in fist fights for walking the wrong way on an aisle, she came up with that. She just randomly thought, well, what would get people to, you know, really take this seriously? I think I'll make a 6 feet rule. I know nothing scientifically about it, but I'll do it.
I tell you what, you know,
she's
our
boasting.
Media talks a lot about, you know, racism and and, you know, how it's this huge problem in America. And you think about how they literally split people in twos. It was people who were going to follow these mandates and people who weren't. Like, the division in that was so massive. Let me just tell you, never in my life have I been called a C-U-N-T. Let me repeat that. C-U-N-T. Never in my life. But because I was in a store without a mask, 6 feet away from somebody who had no idea who I was, just turned around and decided that that was gonna
that
was
right
the label for me for
and
the day.
And this Christian grandma almost got in a few fist fights.
Oh, I know.
You know, it was tough. I had to hold my, because people were calling me names. They were threatening my husband. It was bad.
So what's interesting is in my book, I explained that they put the policies and procedures in place and then everybody fell into it, and they still are in some cases right now. And the fact is they had it all planned out long before. Well, she is now stepping forward and she's saying, hey, look what I done.
But why? Why now? And think about this. As they bring on monkeypox, they had an event 201 for monkeypox. As they think about Marburg, which they could lock down the country for Marburg, they already have an executive order for that.
Right.
And they're bringing mask mandates back to LA County. I heard Kentucky. So as she's telling the truth, they're doing the opposite.
Well,
it's
no.
Crazy.
No. She is promoting the agenda to happen around again. So the fact is, once you understand, and you have to get my book, well, we're running out of time, but the bottom line is they have to give you notice, and now what she's doing is it's called the magic shoe.
Yeah.
She's giving notice.
Giving notice.
That she, this is, we've done what we're told, we're doing it. And
it's almost like we lied, but now we know better, so listen to us again.
But they don't. It's all a lie.
Okay, well, you know, our goal for the Flame podcast is to make it a top performer within the political podcast category. We need your help. Seriously, we need your help to do this. It's as simple as sharing the show with 10 of your friends. That's it. Just 10 of your friends. And speaking of sharing, we do have a super great guest, or a couple of them possibly, coming up who are running for office, and they are righting the wrongs the leftists have created.
God, I'm running for your life.
Welcome to our Torchbearer segment, where we interview people who are carrying the torch of truth and making a positive difference in our world. This week, we have Matt Larkin on with us, who is running for Congress. You can find more about him at larkinforcongress.com.
Number four.
Number four, yes. I should say that. Larkin4Congress.com. Matt Larkin is running for Congress. He is a lifelong Washingtonian, a father of four small children. He believes his family and yours deserves a better and safer Washington. For too long, Washington has been heading in the wrong direction. Crime continues to rise, drug abuse is out of control, and the homeless situation in our state has hit a breaking point. Yet no one is doing anything about it. Our state is in desperate need of a leader to step up to the plate and take these issues head on. We need common sense solutions, not more job-killing tax hikes and reckless spending. He is ready to fight back against those who have turned a blind eye to the issues plaguing our state, the issues that no one ever seems to deal with. He loves Washington. He was born and raised here and wants his children to have the same opportunities he had growing up. He is running for Congress to fight for you and to fight for our future because Washington is worth fighting for. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, thank you.
How are you?
Very well today. Another 90 plus degree day in Western Washington.
Do you have AC?
I do. Thank goodness.
Woohoo! Yeah. You're doing better than some of us. We're in studio, no AC. So,
those windows open.
Yeah, we do. We do. We do. We have a good fan. So, Matt, why don't you tell us your background?
Sure. Yeah. So, my background, you kind of touched on some of it, but my family has lived in Washington for over 165 years.
Wow.
So, we homesteaded off the Oregon Trail before this place was even a state a long time ago. I went to Gonzaga for law school, got my law degree, and then went past law school and got an additional advanced legal degree at George Washington Law. And then I took a job working for the president. I worked for George W. Bush in the White House as an associate director of presidential speech writing. So I was an attorney slash speech writer for the president in the White House for his full last year in office. And I met my wife over there working in the White House, and we got married, and I moved back to Washington State, my home, to raise a family. And I took a job as a criminal prosecutor in Pierce County. I did that for a short time, putting bad guys in jail before I got called to our family business, which is a third generation manufacturing company. We employ over 600 people. We make waterworks pipeline products and things that products that bring clean drinking water to people all over the world. And I always like to say we were America first before it was even cool to be America first.
Right?
We make our products here in the United States, and more importantly, mostly in Washington State, which is the way it should be. And we're not planning on changing that.
Amen to that.
We need that so bad. And, you know, we need manufacturing and all industry to come back to America, you know. So good on you, Matt. You know, that's a really good thing. And there's a lot there that I could just go, what was the White House like? But first of all, before we get into any in-depth questions, I do want the people to know what office, what district you're running for, and what's the territory around that?
Sure. And I guess that's the final piece of my bio is in 2020, I ran for attorney general statewide. It was a big race, and we took the fight to the scariest politician in Washington, Bob Ferguson.
Yeah.
And we did it. We didn't blink. We stared him in the eyes, and we didn't blink. And we won our tough primary, and we fought him all the way through November. But this fight isn't over. So now I'm running for Congress, United States Congress. It's the 8th Congressional District. It's considered a top 10 seat in the country nationally. So it's being very, very closely watched. And it's a district that's huge and unique. And that's what I love about it. Half of it is over the mountains, so it goes way over to Kittitas County, so like Ellensburg and Clallam, Chelan County, so Chelan, Manson, Wenatchee. And then it comes back over the mountains to my side of the state over here. And it runs all the way to the northern edge of Snohomish County down to the southern portion of Pierce County. So it covers, you know, Sultan and Leavenworth and Granite Falls and Darrington, all the way down through King County. So Covington, Auburn, East Redmond, Issaquah, Sammamish, and then the Pierce County areas are Puyallup and Graham and Eatonville and all sorts of places down south.
So
there
it's like half of Washington almost.
I know. It's huge. What's unique about it is you come on this side of the state and it's a lot of tech folks and urban areas, and then you go to the east side and it's ranchers and farmers. And,
yeah.
So the assets are very, very different. You need a lot of constituents.
But I mean, that's the beauty in America, right? I mean, all mm-hmm. the differences, trying to be in the middle and just doing the right thing no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that you're exactly right. And I think what I'm finding and have found, I've been in this race, believe it or not, for a long time. I think 15 months now. And what I'm finding is I've been all over the district for 15 straight months everywhere, or that the issue sets are pretty much more similar than you would think. People care about the same thing on this side as they do on the east side of the state.
You know, actually, as you're talking about that, why don't you go ahead and give us some examples of the top issues that you're seeing and your plans to solve those?
Sure. Well, the top issues, I mean, we're doorbelling thousands of doors and I'm in front of people constantly. The top 10 issue that I hear about is inflation. Number one overall mm-hmm. is inflation. Mm-hmm. They are worried. They can't, and rightfully so. It costs a fortune to feed your family these days or to put gas in your tank. And you know, let alone put clothes on your back or take your kids on a road trip for the summer. Like, these are things that really are concerning to people. We're at about 10% inflation right now, even higher in some areas. And that's a direct 10% tax increase on every single American. That is a huge, huge concern, especially since we don't see it coming down anytime soon. In fact, mm-hmm. I read an article this morning that said it's going to continue to go up. There's no end in sight. That's scary for people. Number two issue that I'm hearing is crime. And this continues on with my theme of my attorney general race, where we were focusing on the rising crime. We're not only seeing it nationally, we're seeing it specifically spike here in Washington. I mean, in Washington alone, murder rates are up 46% over last year.
I feel like 46%. Every day there is a shooting somewhere. And
yeah. The other day.
Yeah. Two kids, right?
Yeah. They
two
died.
Kids passed away. And we hear, you know, people talking who, you know, are running for different things or even just in the news nationwide, you know, gun control and how we need more gun reform. And I'm blown away because we know just what, 2 months ago, there was a 15-year-old who actually shot at a vehicle in a high school parking lot and was found, arrested, released within 24 hours on $500 bail back to his parents. So if we
$500. Oh goodness.
That's crazy. The guns aren't the problem. Not being punished for committing crimes is the problem. We're allowing these things to happen.
We're have a very permissive attitude toward crime, and that's why we rolled out our campaign slogan, "Make crime illegal again."
Yeah, please.
It's
right?
National press. I know. It's stupid that I even have to say it
Common
out loud,
sense.
But it's true. So we put it on every single sign. We put it on all of our commercials. Like, this is a rallying cry for a lot of us. We want to make crime illegal again. And it's gotten me national press. I've been on Fox News 3 or 4 times, on Newsmax, like, talking about making crime illegal again. And it's true. And everywhere I go, I'm hearing, "Oh, you're the make crime illegal again guy." and it's because people feel, frankly, that it is
yep.
legal to commit crimes now.
There's I feel no- like criminals have more rights than the law-abiding citizens.
I think so, too. That feels
that's
so
exactly right. There's
yeah.
a bigger emphasis on criminal rights than on victims' rights. And yep. that's the problem.
And then the third issue.
Well, then Biden gives us a new gift every single day. So pick your third issue. But yeah, I'm focusing on drugs. I think drugs are a huge problem, and they all kind of go together a little bit. But fentanyl is flowing into our communities at record rates.
So let me ask you about that, Matt. So we know we have like 108 people dying every day from fentanyl overdoses. It's actually the largest killer in, is it like age 18 to like 45, I believe. And yet we have wide open borders. How is that possible?
And that well, it's possible because the Democrats control our government. That's how it's possible. But you're right. It's flooding in a lot of times from China, but up through the Mexican border, because that's how they get it across into our country. And it is scary, scary stuff. And I haven't mentioned yet, but I'm a father of four little kids. I've got a 12-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And this is scary to my wife and I, as our kids are just kind of cresting the hill into the teen years, our oldest. Like, he'll be 13 in a few months. And that's scary. This stuff is flooding into our communities. They're finding it in parks. They're finding it in schools. And just a tiny, tiny bit can kill you instantly. And it's very problematic. And we've got to do something about it. It starts with closing our southern border, period. We need an aggressive border policy.
Matt, you said that a lot of the fentanyl is coming out of China, and we know that 80% of the pharmaceuticals that come into the U.S. are coming out of China. Do you think it's by any accident that we had the coronavirus come out of China, and now we have fentanyl like streaming across the border? Do you think there's any coincidence to that?
I certainly can draw some definite coincidences there. I don't think China has our best interest in mind. I will say that. And I think it's something we got to keep very, very close eye on, especially now with the global catastrophes that we're seeing. The Taiwan situation worries me a lot.
Russia, too. European, it's spreading out. It's spreading.
Very scary.
Yeah.
We've got war raging in Europe, and we've got a huge, huge, well-armed, I wouldn't call them an enemy quite yet, but we've got a huge, huge armed country called China that ultimately would love to see us become part of their country. They do not have our best interests in mind, and they view us as a threat, and they view us as an enemy. But we smile at each other, but below the surface, we both don't like each other. And that's how it is set up right now, and that worries me significantly. You see these drug connections. They have no qualms pumping drugs into our communities. They don't care about our kids and about our health. If anything, it weakens us in their eyes. So it's absolutely a great connection to make there.
Let me ask you a question, Matt. This is Nicole. So we all know the issues. I mean, they're glaring in our face. I think even most normal human beings understand that we're in trouble. I mean, Biden's ratings are in the tank. But once you get in, let's say you win and you get in, and how do we turn the ship around? What is your action plan to change things?
Well, I think, first of all, it takes the right person to be in there, right? I'm so sick and tired of putting Republicans into these places and then being really disappointed by how they vote and how quickly they're willing to spend money and how they just cave the second they get there. Mm-hmm. We need to pull into these offices with steel spines and with backbones and people who actually care and aren't there to make friends and aren't there to make money and aren't there to enrich themselves. Who are there to actually fix things. And that's where I differ from a lot of my opponents, and that's where I differ from, frankly, most of Congress. I'm going back to fix it. I'm pissed off. I've got four kids, and I'm scared to death for their future. So when I get back there, I'm going to be digging in and fighting for issues and fighting for things that we care about as conservative Republicans. And that's where it starts. It starts by having discipline and not voting to spend every dollar that comes across your desk in every bill, and trying to actually shrink the size of federal government, trying to actually make the federal government smaller and more accountable and transparent, and then you work from there. But it starts by sending the right people to Congress. So that's my plan of action, is getting back there and actually having a backbone.
Well, and I think truly that is honestly probably the one quality that we need there was a lot of tent revivals this weekend and a lot of conversations. And in those conversations, it seems that we're in a time where things are very black and white. You're either on one side or you're on the other. We can't be riding the fence. People, we're either praying for our communities and helping people find salvation, or they're going to hell. Our country, we either need to start voting correctly, sending people in the office who are going to put in the correct votes, no matter if they're liked or not liked. Because again, it's heaven or hell. There's no in between. If we accept mediocrity, then that is what we're going to get.
Mediocrity.
Mediocrity, is that the word?
Yeah.
Hey, I just like to make up words. If you don't know, I'm Anna Kane. I make up words.
Okay.
And so, I mean, that's the reality. Is if we accept this, this is what we're going to get. So, I really respect you saying that, because I know most people get into their positions and they're, you know, playing to get along. And mm-hmm. I don't think that we're in a time where we can no longer play along. So you may be the only one in the sandpit and rocks thrown at you.
I know. Well,
Matt, I'm Steve. I'm the producer and I butt in once in a while on the show. And I had a couple things I wanted to ask you. As much as we point fingers at China, China is not the, as far as I'm concerned, really anything to be concerned about. What we have is we have a small cadre of people who basically puppet politicians to do their bidding. And if you look at the Biden administration, you know they're not making these decisions. It's people behind them. It's part of a worldwide global idea, the worldwide reset. They're in your plain view. So knowing that, and knowing a lot of Republicans went right along with every mandate that was passed down through legislation or suggested from on high. Everybody wore their masks. Everybody got their vaccines. And all of it's nonsense. And now even the gal that was behind CDC wrote a book, and she's saying, well, this is what we did, blah, blah, blah. It was all planned. So what are you going to do in the midst of that kind of an environment where everybody's basically going along? They don't have a backbone. They've been bought and paid for, probably have a lot of black books on their, you know, a lot of photos of them doing things they shouldn't, because that goes a lot on D.C. So talk to us about how you are going to be different. How would you stand up against the next wave of trying to shut us down? How would you stand up against that?
Sure. Well, you can imagine, first of all, had I been elected attorney general, how different the state would have looked. We've got an attorney general who's complicit with every single thing the governor did.
Yes.
And that was a contagious thought, right? Every branch of the state government went along with it because the attorney general rolled over and didn't push back. So from positions of leadership like that, we need to be pushing back on this stuff, on this madness. And had I been in Congress during the Biden mandates, or potential, he tried to mandate a lot of things that the court struck down, thankfully.
Yes.
But I would have been calling attention to it. We have subpoena power in Congress, and I would have been holding hearings. I would have been looking into it. I would have been shining spotlights on certain areas and saying, this is madness. And that's the kind of leadership that was so lacking. And so it was so disappointing mm-hmm. as a citizen during all of this to not see much of that. There were a few isolated incidents of it, but we needed real conservative leaders pushing back on this stuff, and they weren't. And I'm with you. I felt very let down by my leadership the last mm-hmm. 3 years. And again, that's one of the big reasons that I'm continuing to run. I feel like we've taken such a nosedive even in the last 3 years in this country and in this state. So those are things I can actually do from Congress. What's interesting is you see my opponent, Kim Schreier, say, well, I'm fighting the Biden administration. She's saying that in her new ad, and it's laughable. Like, you have been complicit, Kim, in every single action that's come out of this federal government, that's come out of the mouth of this president, that the governor has mandated. And now to pretend like you've been fighting back is laughable. We need politicians who really will fight back, and I will be one of them. As an attorney, I think my skill set lends perfectly to that. As a prosecutor, it also lends perfectly to that. But even more importantly, as a business owner, we've had to zig and zag for all of these crazy mandates from the state government, from the federal government, to adapt and to like push back where we can, but still keep our employees employed. It's been a train wreck to try and be a business owner the last 3 years in Washington State. So we need real leadership is what it comes down to. And yes, I'm hearing what you're saying. And that's what I'm hearing at doors too. People are sick of this.
It's like you can't even recognize our own country. I don't even recognize some of my family members. I don't even recognize some of my neighbors, people in my own community. I don't know. The division is so in your face. And this is the thing, is I think, you know, when we disagree, sometimes we can, you know, agree to disagree. But I feel like this division, it is literally threatening lives and livelihoods. So it's like you can't just agree to disagree.
Because they're hurting us by the thought process.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And then putting things into action.
And how do we get our oil back? How do we get our border? I heard that, you know, they're killing off our military, whether you agree with that or not. It's my opinion. But the truth is that they're bringing all these, you know, hundreds of thousands of well-bodied men over the Mexican border. And we're being infiltrated and we're having our oil taken away, our food taken away. It's like a full front attack. Do you think we're at war and how do you stop it?
Well, I mean, it's a cultural war for sure. And I think you're seeing it more now than ever. And that's why the division is worse now than ever. And you touched on it at the very beginning of this question when you said people have changed over the last 3 years. There's so much anger and division, and people you thought were your friends, even in your own family, that you could talk to cordially at Thanksgiving. Now you can't even look at them, or they won't show up to Thanksgiving dinner because of politics and because of this divide. And it speaks to a bigger problem, and I think that's that the Democratic Party has left its middle. There is no more moderate Democrat in this country.
We call them the movable middles.
Yeah, but they've gone so far out to the left with their leadership and their policies that there's no longer a comfortable middle for them.
Yeah.
And that creates a ton of division. I pray so often that we can get back at some point to civility and to the place where we could actually talk to each other. And I mean, I was sign waving yesterday and I had a handful of Democrats drive by screaming really nasty things at me.
Tell you were number one? Let me just tell you,
our
at
pastor
the Flame
just said he got more number ones lately than ever before.
At the Flame, we love getting number ones, and we love getting like hate mail. It doesn't happen very often, but when we do, I'm like, yeah, they read it. I love being number one, and I love getting a hate mail.
Well, my 9-year-old son was standing right there next to me with a Vote for My Dad shirt on, and they were not embarrassed at all to do that in front of a 9-year-old.
Like, yeah, that's sad.
This is the level of rhetoric. It is sad. We can't dialogue anymore.
It's brainwashing.
Yeah.
It's a coercive, well-planned, I just wrote a book to plug that, but it talks about that, and it's all been programmed. They did this on purpose. They've literally gotten people under a spell.
Yeah, it's social media.
And when everybody on the left is pushing the same messaging and they literally shut down everybody on the right side of life from being able to communicate and tell their story, you know that we are now living more tearing down over at USSR. Our media is, I call it Pravda. It's propaganda. It has nothing to do with reality anymore. And it's only because of these kind of alternative media sites now and some local radio shows that you're actually able to get the truth out. And so you, as a person running, I think your biggest thing has to be out there and meeting people face-to-face because that's your strength. And how do we trust somebody who says they're going to be conservative?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, I think, is how... Matt, I like you. We've met, you know, but how do we know you're going to do what you say you're going to do, because we've heard this from, you know, everyone. And we want to believe you. We want to vote for the right person. We want to change America. But the average American doesn't know who to trust anymore.
I think it's not even a we, like we want to believe you or we want to trust. It's that people, in fact, actually one of the questions is if you believe in election fraud, election integrity. I think one of the problems is that there's so much discontent, and there's been so many lies and so many rhinos and so many poor choices that people are giving up, and they're just like, it doesn't even matter anymore, because nothing they say they're going to do, they do. So I'm just going to crawl in a hole and act like it's going to fix itself. Yeah. So how do we?
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, you've obviously, you know, talked about, you know, who you are, what you do, you know, in general, what you would have done, what you're going to do. So I don't even know if he can answer that question. I'm looking at Nicole. I don't even know if you can answer that question.
Oh,
but
yeah, but I want the heartfelt Matt, you know, to just say, you know, I stand in what I believe. I guess I could answer it for him, what I want to hear.
Oh, you let him talk.
Yeah, I'll let you talk.
Well, I think one thing that we've got to look for, and my wife and I are believers, and we're people of faith. And I think the Bible talks about fruit, right? There's fruit. If the tree's not bearing fruit, you identify people of faith by the fruit. And faith is a intricate component of our lives. And I think we need to be sending more believers to Congress and to the state house and to the state Senate. We need, frankly, not sending, we need more Christians stepping up to run.
You mean
roles.
You don't believe in separation of church and state?
I believe the government's role is to protect people of faith.
Yes.
And I think our churches need to be talking about that, because you're right. More Christians do need to be running. More pastors need to be speaking about why it's important to love your country and to support your country.
Sure. 100%. And to this whole circular discussion that we're having on how do you know who's going to do the right thing when they get there, I think you look for people with a true north on their compass. You look for people who have an anchor point. And for me and my family, that's the Lord. We that's how we determine right from wrong. That's how we'll determine how we're going to vote when we get to Congress. And it's very, I've always been very open about my faith as I've been campaigning. We don't hide it. We don't parse words or try to get cute with it. We're followers of Jesus, and we're proud of that. And hopefully people can see that and have a little bit of comfort or confidence knowing how I'm going to govern when I get there. And that's with a moral compass that's rooted in my faith.
And, you know, I can attest to that, Matt. The first time I met you was actually at Jake's house. And that was, you weren't running for this position. It was what, 2 years? Was it 2 years ago when you were running for maybe attorney general?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And so the reason I continue to attend my church is because my church is very open on the pulpit during election time. And I was in the pews and Matt came in and he actually did church that day. He was the pastor and he gave a great word. And so when I met you again a few months ago, I was like, oh yeah, I remember you. I saw you at church. So I can attest that you definitely, you know, you are walking the talk, because you had enough meat to be able to give us a message. And so I definitely appreciate that. And you're right. We do need people in office who have a moral compass. And it is time to get back to under God, regardless. Our Constitution is, you know, is written under God. And so we have to get back there. We see the leftist ideologies and they're all satanic, all of them.
Well, I mean, the Pledge of Allegiance, we proudly say under God. My kids probably say it louder than most kids when they're when they're doing the pledge. But that's how we're raising them, and we need to get back to that. We need to get back to morality, and there's a way to do it, and that's by getting behind candidates that believe what you believe and that you trust. Will do what you want when they get back there, and that starts for me with faith, and that's one of the things. Even as a non-candidate, Matt Larkin, when I'm just private citizen Matt Larkin, that's one of the things I look for in my candidates, because I want to know that they're accountable to something higher than just their own code of ethics.
So, Matt, I got a question. So we know that there is a lot of laws already on the books, and that that you are one individual, and it seems like the laws have been overwritten, or I just should say ignored, both in D.C. and on a state level here. How can you just work with your compatriots to get them to just follow the law? Because the laws are on the books about how you deal with crime, how you deal with drugs, how you deal with, you know, things. And it seems like we know that the criminal syndicate is running our country right now, and our state of Washington, quite frankly. And they just ignore. I mean, it reminds me of what the scriptures say.
They just try to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, they're operating in a lawless fashion. And, you know, the Bible does say that many on that day will say, did we not do this? And he's going to say, I don't know, you who practice lawlessness. Well, a lot of politicians are practicing lawlessness. And then the people within the departments take those and run with it. So how can you work to just get the basic laws that are already on the books enforced? Because police departments are a mere shadow of what they used to be. Every, you know, because of this, they're not being supported. How can you help about that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And I think we would all agree. We probably have, maybe you wouldn't agree with me, but I think you would, that we have too many laws on the books as it is.
Yes.
We don't be adding more laws. There's very few that I can think that I would want to add. Wouldn't say there's none. There's a few that are desperately needed, but we need to, I mean, we do not need to bloat the size of federal government and just pass law after law after law, because they're selectively enforced. And that's the problem. Level. Police are demoralized, by the way, on that. But they, and it's not their fault. They're hemorrhaging officers. They have no support from above. The left is calling for them to be defunded and demonizing them. And they're, it's not their fault, but they're unable to do their job well in Washington State, especially with things like the no pursuit laws to chase a criminal. That's an actual law here. And we need to re-equip, retrain, and give them the tools that they need to do their job. A lot of that falls on the state level, but we can also do a better job from the federal level. There's federal law enforcement grants. There's a ton of money to law enforcement around the country. And part of what is empower that by
hey, Matt, you're cutting out. I don't know if it's on your end or whatever. Are you still in the same location you were, Ben?
Yes, I haven't moved. Is that, you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't remember, not sure where I got cut off, but I'd love to link federal grants. I would call it the Make Crime Illegal Again Act. It's one of those few laws that I would actually like to see invoked and passed, where we tie federal law enforcement grants to a state or local government's ability and propensity to prosecute criminals. If it shows that they're letting guys out of jail for $500 bail, guess what? They're not going to get a check from the federal government. We want to incentivize law enforcement jurisdictions that are actually doing their job from the federal government level. And these are things that are so badly needed right now. So we need to do a better job. And in Washington State, we're just like the test case for every terrible policy on the face of the earth, unfortunately.
Call it the incubator.
Tell me about it. So there's things like our wonderful attorney general and governor have severed local and state law enforcement's ties with ICE over racial concerns and immigration. So guess what? They're not talking to each other now. These are like, come on, guys. These are
When did illegal aliens coming here become a racial issue? It's not a racial issue. It's not that we don't like Mexicans. It's not a racial issue. It's a safety issue.
We wouldn't want immigrants from any country coming here illegally, whether it's Ireland, England, or Mexico. It makes no difference. We just want immigrants here legally. think we all agree
on that. Amen.
Do it the right way and don't cut in line, which by the way, makes those Mexican immigrants who are doing it the right way really upset. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to them. I've been waiting in line 10, 20 years sometimes to become citizens. And it really bothers them that people cut in line. So we need to do a better job of messaging that point, too, as Republicans, because we're terrible at communicating these ideas.
How do we communicate them? How do we engage people, Matt? Because that's a problem.
Yeah, no, it is. Democrats are better at messaging than we are. So we need to put better messengers into these seats. We need people who can articulate these points in Congress, frankly. We need people who can articulate them in the state Senate and state House and the governor's mansion. So a part of it is we just keep picking bad people to run for office and people who can't carry the torch very brightly or very far. So I think you're doing the right thing. You're active. You're involved with the flame. You're building a good bench of candidates, hopefully, and supporting them. And I love your publication. And hopefully it's encouraging more and better and brighter candidates to run who can articulate these perspectives. And hopefully we start winning some of these races and gaining beachheads. I call them beachheads. Like, we're not going to win the whole state back just instantly, right? We've got to win certain races. And from there, we can use them as leverage points to take back other seats and other races. And eventually the governor's mansion. But it starts by getting behind races that we know we have a good chance of winning. Actually, like mine in the 8th, this is a winnable, winnable seat. Republicans held it for 30 years until we lost it in 2018. 30 years it was Republican. And in fact, I won this district in my attorney general race in 2020. I won the 8th with over 51% of the vote. So I know we can win this thing.
You know, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, Democrats, they just communicate better because at the flame, that's what we're trying to do. If we settle, that's what we're going to get. If we know that there's a problem, there's obviously a solution. The flame is the solution to our mainstream media crisis, really. And so we all have to be working together, because just as important as your job is, it takes the people in order to get you into office. And when people are well educated, then they'll make better decisions. And so I think what we're doing is, you know, is so important, because we gotta get people in the right places, and we just need to be smarter, and we just need to be better. And you're right, we just need to do the right thing under God.
And so if you were to close this and tell the people your most important point in a minute or so, a minute and a half, what would you say to them?
I would say, don't give up. I would say, look, we've got a state to take back that, frankly, I don't recognize. I'm embarrassed of this state right now. And I've lived here my whole life.
Amen.
I'm so proud to be from Washington. Gosh, I say this everywhere. I'm a broken record, but this is the most beautiful state in the union. My goodness. I love this state, but we have got to take it back. And my 4 kids, I want them to be as proud of this state as I am. And we are not headed there right now. We go into our cities, and they're stepping over tents and bottles and trash and needles.
Yep.
And it is embarrassing. And we have got to do something. I'm stepping up. This is a calling for my wife and I and for our family. This is a calling. We feel called to do this. This is our mission field right now. Some people are church planters. Some are missionaries in a foreign country. Ours is getting into this dirty, dirty area called the swamp.
And Matt, how do people get in contact with you?
Our website is larkin4congress.com, LARKIN, the number 4, Congress. We've got a great website. Go on there. Get involved. We need your help. We're less than a week from Election Day. We need to win this primary.
Amen.
Get out
Thank
and vote.
You. Thank you, Matt,
Thanks,
for,
Matt
coming
for coming
on,
with
us.
We
God bless,
that.
And we look Thanks forward so much. To staying in touch.
Big announcement. My new book, Breaking the Deception Code, A True Seeker's Guide to Discernment, is now available. If there's a singular problem facing the world today, it's a lack of discernment reflected in billions of ignorant people, but trusting people, choosing to align themselves with dark forces intent on destroying them physically, mentally, financially, and spiritually. The solution is learning how to have discernment. And there's no better way than purchasing my new book, Breaking the Deception Code, A True Seeker's Guide to Discernment. My book will equip you with all you need to know about the battle you're in and how to stop being easy target for the human and spiritual predators. Breaking the Deception Code, A True Seeker's Guide to Discernment. Available now through all online booksellers.
Welcome to our Torchbearer Doubleheader Edition, where we are interviewing people who are carrying the torch of truth and making a positive difference in our world. This week, we have our second guest, Scott Stevenson, on with us, who is running for Congress. You can find more about him at Scott4WA8.com. Scott says, one country under God, the radical left Marxists and weak establishment right are destroying our country and endlessly fail to protect and support the average Washingtonian. We no longer have the luxury of waiting for someone to change. The stakes are too high. Our children's future is on the line. Our security and prosperity are at risk. Our country is on the brink. The time for change is now, and we cannot afford to lose. We will not lose. Scott, welcome on the show with us.
Thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So why don't you give us some background about you?
Absolutely, yeah. So I am running for Congress against Kim Schreier. I am the only America First candidate in the race. I am a proud Trump Republican. And as you said in your intro, thank you very much for that. Our country is under attack from the radical left and the weak establishment right. Frankly, the rhinos are doing nothing about it. And I'm an engineer by trade and background. I've been working 30 years in tech. I'm not a lawyer, not a politician, not a political insider. I don't know anything about politics. But what I do know is that our country is being destroyed in front of our very eyes. And I am standing up and exercising my right as a citizen to run, and I'm going to fight endlessly against this. The politicians, the career politicians in particular, are destroying our country, and they're the problem. And so that's what I'm for. Just a little bit more about me. I have a degree, a master's degree in aerospace engineering from MIT. I worked for NASA and Department of Defense for many years before going into the internet, and so I am a bona fide rocket scientist. So that's my joke, and I'm sure happy to be here for our conversation today.
I'm really happy to have you on. This is Nicole, and you know, when I read your bio or your declaration, and I feel the urgency. And that sits with my soul so heavily. I was just talking in between about the complete, utter urgency and the luxury we don't have to change things. But I do want people to know exactly what office, what your district looks like, what's the territory, and what can you do to change your local community too?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, urgency is such a great word for it. I truly believe that we have at most 2 years to save our republic. The attacks from the left are accelerating. The attacks on our kids, in terms of the grooming, the CRT indoctrination. These things are going on, and, you know, we have a invasion at the southern border, we have a stolen election, you know, all these things are accelerating in pace, and so urgency is exactly the right word, and that's why I'm pushing so so hard to get new voices into political office. And in this case, what I'm trying to do is run for Congress. So a little bit about District 8. So I am running in Congressional District 8, which has been traditionally a conservative district since its inception many, many years ago, when Congressman Reichert, formerly Sheriff Reichert, stepped down. It was, unfortunately, the race was won by a leftist Democrat, Kim Schreier. And Kim Schreier is a pediatrician, as many of you probably know. And she supports forced vaccination of our kids and masking of our kids, which a pediatrician who has taken the oath to do no harm, in my mind, should know better. And in addition, she has also voted 100% of the time with Nancy Pelosi. So I maintain and submit that she is not the person we need in Congress to represent what is largely a conservative district. Now, let's talk a little bit about the district, since you asked. The district is huge. It spans approximately 10,000 square miles. Everything east of Lake Stevens, east of Lake Sammamish, and East Pierce County, all the way to the Columbia River. So there are five primary counties: Snohomish, King, Pierce, Kittitas, Chelan are in it, and there's also a little piece of Douglas County. So we are talking an area that spans an incredible geography. I call it 10,000 square miles of awesome. It has a lot of everything that Washington has to offer in terms of scenery and nature and environment. And it also has amazing people. And I've been on the road now with my partner Jen for almost a month and a half in our RV. We call the RV the Gipper. And we have driven 3,500 miles, and we have been to every city, town, village, and hamlet in the entire district. And I've met personally thousands of voters and shook their hands and heard from them exactly how they're feeling and what they're worried about. And so that's our district, and I could not be more blessed and proud to run in this district. I've lived in it for a long time. I've climbed and hiked all over it, so I feel a very, very deep connection to District 8.
So you're just talking about traveling in the RV. I think that's so cool. All the memories that are made, right? And you talk about, you know, just being able to speak with people and finding out what's, you know, the issues that are concerning to them. So can you give us those top three issues?
Absolutely. So, you know, people assume that the economy is the number one issue. And I won't kid you, the economy is a critical issue. You know, obviously gas has gone from $2.17 a gallon 18 months ago nationwide to over $5.80. Energy prices are up, food prices are up. And so that is definitely hurting the middle class in a huge way, and we could talk about that a bit. But that's not the thing that people talk about. And they're not talking about crime in general. What they're talking about is three big things. One, they're talking about our kids. They're talking about the radical trans agenda. They're talking about CRT, the indoctrination that's going on in school. And they're really, really afraid for our country. But also, they do not want the government thinking that they own our kids. And they are pushing back against that extremely hard. And so that is the number one issue. And I sum that up as the no kids, no future. And this is a year of the parents. And number of years, we've seen movements nationwide in school boards for parents who are frankly fed up with what the federal government and local governments are doing with education.
And they're called terrorists, right?
And they're called domestic terrorists. We saw this with the Loudoun County Moms, that incredibly strong movement, which actually completely changed the outcome of the governor's race in Virginia. They were called domestic terrorists and labeled as such, and tracked by the FBI. So this is how our government responds to this. So
for actually parenting. So we have cities that don't parent their children, and crime is through the roof. But then if you want to parent your child and you want to make sure that your child is getting a proper education and values, then you're a terrorist.
Yes, you
quite
are
confusing.
A terrorist. Isn't it unbelievable? our own government is labeling citizens, parents, moms, dads, as terrorists.
My friend, our friend, he was on our show, Sean McBridery. He lives in Maine. He was just shout out from Dinesh D'Souza. And they took him to court because he said there was pornography, and he went against the school board, and he got I don't know if he got arrested, but he was up for a charge. I know that. And he fought against it and won. And so that was a really, really powerful, good thing to happen. But we need that to happen everywhere. And how would you...
I think that's about being brave, right? So like, we got to stop being scared because we have some pushback, right? I feel like that's why the Democratic Party wins, is they don't care. They just go... full board, and they don't care when they get pushback. We need to stop caring about the pushback and keep moving forward.
So you said two other, I'd love to come back to that, but I want us to make sure that you said that's the one issue, and thank you very much. What's the other two issues that you have learned as you were out talking?
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. So the second issue, and I'd love to dive a little deeper into each of these, because I have a pretty clearly set out plan for what I'll do in Congress with these. We can talk about that later if you wish. But the second issue is the invasion of the southern border. 250,000 illegal aliens coming across the border every month right now. That could and easily will balloon to north of 500,000 should Title 42 and Remain in Mexico be repealed, which the Biden administration has already attempted to do. To put this into perspective, we only used 300,000 soldiers in Patton's army to invade Europe during World War II, total. So this is 250,000 a month coming into our country. These are largely single males. We know nothing about them. We are not tracking them in our country. We are simply letting them in. And in cases that we've seen, the federal government is actually providing transportation via buses and planes to different parts of the country.
They should provide them back to their own country.
They should provide them back, and I stand firmly against ending this. I believe we should build the border wall. We should complete it. It's rusting in the desert. We paid for it. We have the contracts. We need to get the wall built. We need to stop this.
Is this an infiltration, a coup?
It's all globalism.
It's globalism, and also they're trying to supplant us in the voter rolls.
Yes.
They know that they can get these people in, and they can change the voter rolls to further the democratic, the liberal agenda, which, frankly, is communism.
Biff's world. They want Biff's world.
And how easy it is to fix. Not only do we have contracts for the wall, the wall's been paid for. It's actually costing us more not to be building it.
It's exactly right, Nicole. You couldn't be more right. This is such a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. And we need to law and order when it comes to immigration. We have laws. Our federal government is ignoring these laws. And I just want to go on the record to say, and I have done this, that there are two people responsible for the invasion of our southern border. The first is Joe Biden, and the second is Secretary Mayorkas of the DHS. And I will bring articles of impeachment against both of those men when I get to Congress. So
excellent. That's awesome. Thank you for that. And by the way, this is Anna.
Sorry, Anna.
No, it's all right. It's all right. That's exactly what we need to have happen.
Back it up. Secretary, what's her name?
Or his?
What's his name again? Secretary of what?
Secretary Mayorkas. He's Secretary of Department of Homeland Security.
Oh yes.
So he's also the brainchild of the Ministry of Truth, where he wanted to put the government in control of deciding what disinformation is, thereby controlling free speech. This is the same illustrious individual who is undermining us at every possible turn.
So what you're saying is we don't have the luxury of politics as normal. So immediately you would bring up impeachment articles.
Absolutely, and this just goes to what you were saying, what we were talking about moments ago, which is that we cannot act like it's business as usual. The radical left, the Democrats, they are taking. The Republican Party has been weak for years, especially the rhinos we have. We are always on our heels. We are backing off. We are trying to take the high road, and I'm afraid I'm here to say that we cannot do this anymore. I will never do this. I will fight. You cannot compromise with crazy or evil. That is the situation we are in. This is a war. It is a war, and we need to fight it as such.
I love that you said that. Like, this is a war. We can't play as, like, it's so true. It's so true.
What's the third? The third point, and we're going to circle around and talk about more of this stuff, but what's the third thing you've been learning about when you talk to people?
The third point is that the election in 2020 was stolen.
Yeah.
And we all know that that the Democrats stole the election, the Great Steal. Many of us have seen Dinesh D'Souza's 2,000 Mules. We've seen the sophistication and the funding that they used to steal the election, to steal our God-given right to vote. President Trump is definitely the president of the United States, and I firmly believe that. I know it. We have the data, the information. And I will go into Congress, and I will work with my counterparts, including this large wave of red that's coming that will be America First people that I will ally with. And we will adjudicate the 2020 election. We will not move on. We will not move on from the 2020 election. We will not move on from what happened with COVID. We will not move on from what happened in Afghanistan. We will not move on from the Russia collusion hoax. All of these things need to come to light. We need to understand it. And I will work with my colleagues to ensure we get to the bottom of it.
And how are you going to do that? Not letting it go and making sure we get to the bottom of it is one thing, but how do we secure our
legally
elections in the future?
Yeah.
So, definitely we will bring hearings, and these hearings will have teeth. These will not just be the ones we've seen, these show trial things that the Democrats and Republicans do. There will be real teeth and real consequences for lying to Congress and for lying to the American people. So on the topic of secure election, a couple things. There's a short-term thing I would love to communicate, and then there's a mid to longer-term thing. The short-term thing is, and I'm asking people regularly every time I speak and everywhere on Twitter or all the social media I post on, that I encourage you, please do not send your ballot in the mail. Never put your ballot in the mail. Hold on to your ballot. Hold on to it until Election Day, which is next Tuesday, believe it or not. I can't believe how close it is. We're 6 days out. Hold on to your ballot. And there are two reasons you need to hold on to your ballot. The first reason is, if you send your ballot in early, then they know how many votes they need to manufacture and where they need to manufacture them to win. So you're giving them information. So you can simply hold on to it and prevent them from having that information, which means they'll have to do it without knowing, which means we can catch them. The second thing that you need to do is you need to go to votewa.gov, votewa.gov, votewa.gov. Look up what's going on with your ballot. You're holding your ballot in your hand. If you go to that site and it says your vote has been recorded or it has been accepted, it means that somebody illegally voted in your name. And now you have an instance of voter fraud. Take your ballot, take it to your sheriff, report this. The sheriff is required by law to investigate this. Now we have an instance of election fraud. If we all catch these people using this process, suddenly we can impact what happens in the midterm, in the primary and in the midterm. So that's what I suggest to everybody do here between now and August 2nd.
Probably the best info that we have gotten. Too bad we haven't had this for months.
I know.
Thank you. Thank you for that info, because honestly, that is exactly what the people are capable of doing. Like, that is an action plan.
So votewa.gov, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Votewa.gov. Wow. You can go there, find out exactly what's happening. It's super actionable, super easy thing for people to do. It puts you in control of your vote.
So before you go to the ballot on Tuesday, go there?
Because you want to have your ballot in your hand to prove that it's your ballot and that you're the one that's trying to drop it.
And check, like, if your parents are, like, infirmed and they maybe haven't got their names off the voter registration, I'm going to do that for my dad. I'm going to see if he's still there, or my mom. These are people that my mom's passed 6 years ago. What if that shows up?
Right, and you can see, right? You can look up anybody's record, for better or worse. It's all public information. So go and look it up, and look it up for anyone you know. And if you have a deceased parent or friend, and these are the likely cheating vectors, is they try to hijack the folks who have passed away or who don't regularly vote. And so go and find those and look them up, and then we got them, right? And this is super actionable and easy to do.
What was the long term?
The long term thing is we need to get rid of mail-in voting.
Yes.
It is the single source of fraud. Unfortunately, it originated here under Kim Wyman, who many people call a Republican. She was not a Republican. She was a plant. As a matter of fact, she's been hired by the Biden administration. So mail-in voting is the source of the problem. And convenience is not what we need. We need election security. And here's what I propose. We return to paper ballots. We return to same-day voting. We return to small precincts that maintain the voter rolls. Currently, they're maintained by the state. They should return to the precincts. The precincts know the people. They can easily count them. So we do same-day voting, same-day counting. We'll be able to release the results on the day of the election. We also need nationwide voter ID. You need an ID to do everything else. You certainly need it to vote.
Our Secretary of State has a lot to do with this. And what do you think about that?
Yeah, so our Secretary of State, I want to just put a plug in for a dear, Tamborine Borelli, who has become a dear friend of mine. She is an election integrity warrior. There is no one who can fix this problem besides her. She will never stop. She is constantly under attack. And when she's constantly under attack, that shows that she's over the drop zone.
Yeah.
She will fix, return us to paper ballots, same-day voting, same-day counting, precincts on the voter rolls. She will fix this problem. No one else can. I believe we need her as the Secretary of State. And so I endorse her fully, and I believe in her completely.
She writes for The Flame a lot.
We had her on early on. She's a warrior.
Yeah, she definitely, gives us a lot of info on voter integrity and issues. So.
I want to be clear that we've invited every Secretary of State to write. So it's not that we've just had Tamborine.
Right.
She just stepped up to the plate. That's all.
Yep. And just like different people we've invited to come on the show for the last month and a half, the people who've come on are the people who said yes, and the others have declined. So we left an open door, but... We're so appreciative. So let's step back for a moment. When we talk about this full-on affront of our children, and I don't think anybody saw that coming unless they were already seeing what was happening, how can you as a senator or congressman, sorry about that, how can you work to replace and reduce and or overcome? Because this whole curriculum, this whole movement has started somewhere, and it's just pushed its way into every public sector school there is. How can you work with your people up there that support what you're doing to overturn some of this stuff, this perversion of the children?
No, absolutely. Thanks for asking that question. If I could just take about 30 seconds to describe the thing that woke me up, and I mean not woke, I mean awake. The thing that woke me up was what happened to my son, my 14-year-old son. I have three kids, two 13-year-olds and a 14-year-old with my partner, Jen. My eldest son, Finn, who's now 14, but he was in third grade at the time. He was in Seattle Public Schools. One day, my partner, Jen, got a call from the school, and she was asked to come in. Something had happened in school. Finn, he has ADHD, and at the time he was struggling pretty mightily with fine motor control and focus and concentration, which is, you know, absolutely normal and common. And so she assumed, well, he must have had an outburst or something related to his frustration. So she went into school, and she was met by the teacher and the school psychologist, who sat her and Finn down in the room and proceeded to say that Finn had decided that he wanted to be a girl. They then went on to say, we have chosen a name for him, and we have planned a party for him tomorrow with his class to celebrate his new name. And Jen, if you do not do this immediately, you will ruin him for the rest of his life.
That's a lot of hymns when they're trying to convince you that your son wants to be a girl.
Yeah, well, they may have used her.
Go ahead, so keep...
But this is the thing, right? Like, this is institutionalized child abuse and grooming that is going on in our schools. So,
what did you do? What happened at that point?
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, Jen was completely on her heels, and I wasn't there because, you know, we had never assumed anything like this was going to happen. So she immediately took Finn by the hand, left the building, as you would imagine, and we immediately withdrew him from that school.
Yes.
On the walk to the car, she said, "Finn, what is it you said that caused them to do this?" And he said, "Mom, all I said was sometimes I don't feel like the other boys." And what he meant was that he's an intellectual kid. He's not an athlete. And they twisted this through their radical trans agenda into meaning that he is going to be a girl. And within 12 hours, they started exercising and executing on this plan. So it's just so perverted and disgusting. And so he's out of that school. We put him in a private school. But let's be real here. We're tech workers, formerly. Now we're doing this full time. And so we were blessed with a bit of income that we could use and put him into private school. But not all parents can do this. They have to deal with this head on. And we're starting to see child protective services called on parents. This is so far out of the ordinary and crazy that it has to stop. So I'd be happy to talk about. Here's the things I want to do. First off, and I've gone on the record with this, I put out a press release. I will use my position in Congress, any public school or higher education institution that receives federal funding, if they do any of these things, CRT, grooming, radical trans agenda, they will lose federal funding forever. That is a huge stick that the federal government can use to wield against these guys, and I fully intend to do that. And that will be my signature issue should I be elected to Congress.
You know, they used the CARES Act, and they took all that money, and they said, okay, schools, push the masks, push the jabs, and we will give you money. Our local Edmond School District got $34 million under that program to entice them to stay with the masking and stay with the social distancing and to promote the vaccine.
It's just unbelievable. This is so along those lines, I mean, those numbers are horrific. And here, you know, we need to, and I will push for the demolition of the Department of Education. Yeah. We can no longer have this federal institution department running our education system. I will work very hard to get rid of them. I believe in the money following the kids. We need to fund students, not systems. So I believe that you as the parent should get that money directly to you, and you should decide how you want to spend it on your child. If you want to send them to private school, by all means. If you want to homeschool them, that's great. And lastly, if you still want to send them to public school, by all means. But public schools now are going to have to compete for our dollars. They're not just going to get them, which is what's leading to this sort of stuff. So this is how we begin to dismantle the education system as it exists today and return to our kids getting reading, writing, arithmetic, getting civics, being taught that they live in the best country in the world, that if they're white, they're not racist. If they're black, they're not a victim. We need to return to these things, and that means we need to get the federal government out of education.
I have a question for you. Okay, so those are the top three. I agree. If we don't stop this stuff, all the rest is moot because we've lost our country. But at the same time, people are struggling. Rent is out of control. The housing market's crashing. Inflation's out of control. All the issues that kind of go along with getting your kids in school on being able to think straight. If you don't have money and people are getting shot and crimes out and taxes and all of the issues that are coming alongside of this with those top issues, how do we change it all? There's so much.
Yeah, no, there is so much going on. Let's talk about So let's talk about the economy. And I briefly touched on that at the beginning. But so the first three issues that I talked about are firm instances of where the pillars of our republic are under attack from the radical left and the weak right. And this is all deliberate. They know they have to tear down everything that we have because no one ever chooses communism when things are good.
Who's they?
So they being the radical left and the globalists who want to destroy America because America is the only thing between them and global domination. We're it. And so if they destroy us, there's nobody left. They will end up ruling, and they will rule us like they want to. They want to create a totalitarian global state. And that's it's us that's standing between them and doing so. And so that's another big reason I'm running. Is to fight back against that. But let's talk about the economy. So the fourth pillar is the economy, right? We in America have a vibrant, or at least had a vibrant middle class. We have the American dream. Those are under attack right now deliberately, again, by the left and by the establishment right and by the globalists. And so the way they're doing that now is they're weaponizing energy, because if you raise energy prices, through gasoline prices and through natural gas, all of these things impact not just the price we pay at the pump or for heating our house, but it increases the price of food. It increases the price of fertilizer. It impacts us in every way, in such a way that right now, the average middle-class family in the United States is paying $5,000 more per year for the same things they were paying for last year. And that's a result of the inflation and the energy costs. So we need to return to plentiful, cheap energy. And here's how we do it. It's, again, a two-part plan. First off, we need to immediately lean in on fossil fuels. We need to get back to the leases. We need to be drilling again on the Alaskan coastal plain, the Cook Inlet Basin, the Gulf of Mexico. We need to signal to energy companies that America is open for energy in business. We were energy independent under President Trump. We had $2.17 gas. We were a net exporter of energy. We can be so again. We just need to return to that, which means these policies where the Biden administration is cutting off these leases and they're weaponizing the green agenda and essentially saying, all you need is a Tesla and a windmill, because that's where we're going. That is not a strategy. That is an effort by our government to destroy the middle class and to hurt us. And so we need to get back to plentiful, cheap energy. We can do that quickly. Energy companies can get back to producing oil, refining, and we can get gas down very quickly back to the levels it was at. That's the short term. The second, the midterm, the longer term plan that I have is what I call an energy moonshot. Just like we did the moonshot under Kennedy, where we got man to the moon in a decade, we did that by engaging the greatest scientists and engineers, which is what we have in our country. And we need to put them to work on finding new sources of energy, a diversified energy plan. So, yes, we're going to be doing things like solar and wind, but we're also going to be doubling down on hydro. We're going to be going after nuclear, which is something this country needs to get back to. Nuclear power is the best source of cheap and clean energy we have. We also then need to invest in things like fuel cell technology for automobiles. We need to invest in fusion power. The only byproduct of fusion and fuel cells is water, which is another resource that we can use. It's clean. We in this country can develop these. We have the brains to do so. Once we solve this problem, we give it to the world. Then all of a sudden, everybody has cheap and plentiful energy. Our national security is resolved. And all of these evil people out there who use oil and energy to get money to then go and foment unrest and hurt people worldwide suddenly will no longer have the money to do so.
I totally respect your answer in the energy field, because this is an area where more is better, not less is more, right? We need more options. We have the capabilities, but again, I believe that it is in the globalist agenda to keep us in place. And if we make other countries richer by, you know, exporting oil or getting oil from them and not our own country, then, you know, America is being tanked over and over again. If we, you know, push everybody to get electric vehicles and we don't have the electric grid, then we are keeping people essentially in a 150-foot radius, really. And the notion, I think what drives me the craziest about energy is the notion that electric vehicles are
emissions. That they're really green.
Right? That they're super green. Yeah, but the problem is actually it takes double the amount of emissions just to make them, because even just making the battery, it pollutes. And so, yes, maybe if the electric vehicle is put in a box, it has zero emissions. But getting it to be drivable isn't zero emissions. It's actually way more. So I love that you're wanting more option in the energy sector, because that is exactly what we need.
Yeah, I love that example you gave about the electric vehicles. You are so right. There are plenty of petroleum products are used in the production of these vehicles. Plastic is predominantly what's in them. The materials like lithium that come from these mines, the conditions for the workers that mine this, in many cases children, and forced labor in places like China. This is not the rosy picture that the radical left and left would like you to believe. It is entirely different. And there is no way to recycle these batteries. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you've seen online there are pictures of just graveyards, thousands upon thousands of electric vehicles, which cost too much to buy a new battery. It's cheaper.
A new battery is like $20,000. It's more than a car.
Exactly. And so this is all just a fabrication, a complete fabrication. Yeah.
So, Scott, we are getting close to the end of the show, and I really just want to wrap up one more question. And that question is, if you were in office during the pandemic, would you how would you have handled lockdowns and mandates?
Yeah, so thank you for asking question. First off, I'm really glad you called a plandemic. We need to get to the bottom again, like I said, not moving on. We need to find out what happened with gain of function research and the role of big pharma and its associations with the government, and I will push that. But how I would have handled it. So first off, I believe the government has no right to mandate anything related to what we do with our body and what we put in our body. I went to the March Against the Mandates in D.C., and it was one of the things that really made me, that was actually when I was at that march, staying at the Trump Hotel, in fact, where I met an individual. I was become a good friend of mine, and that's when I finally decided to run. And I am fully against mandates of
Amen.
Any sort.
Well, so we like
that
answer.
I would never have voted for lockdowns. I would never have voted to shut down our economy. You cannot shut down a multi-trillion-dollar economy and then expect it to just start up. This isn't like unplugging a computer and plugging it back in again. They brought our economy to a halt. They crushed small business deliberately. We know how many small businesses went out of business as a result of this. This was a planned and orchestrated destruction of the U.S. economy as well. You know, a couple years ago, saying these things, I would have felt like a conspiracy theorist. And now I feel like, no, this is the truth, and we know this is the truth, and there is more truth to be found, and I know that's what you do on this show, and we will continue to do it.
Thank you, Scott. Hey, so we are nearing our time with you. Can you please tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you and support you?
Absolutely. So you gave this URL at the beginning of the show. Please go to Scott, S-C-O-T-T, the number 4, W-A, the number 8.com. You'll find all the information there about how to support, how to donate. You'll find out where all my events are. Please go there. Please get in touch with us. What I really ask for people right now is You got 6 days. Please get out and vote. We need to vote in huge numbers in order to stop the steal. And I just ask, I know that we're feeling some apathy and some concerns over our vote counting. Use the procedure I shared with you. That'll guarantee that your vote counts. It's critical you vote. Don't sit on the sidelines. Even if you're not going to vote for me, which I really ask that you do, please just get out and vote.
Thank you, Scott, for coming on with us. God bless you.
Thank you.
We look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you so much. It has been such a privilege. You guys are awesome. I'll talk to you all soon.
This is the part of our show we call our weekly word of encouragement, where we take a few minutes to reflect back and share what God has been doing in our lives. But before we share with you, I do want to remind everyone to subscribe. Right now, go subscribe to The Flame Paper. It's our companion publication, and it is really as simple as going to theflameusa.com and just going to the subscribe button and click as many as you want. Don't worry about the first column. Go to the number and click subscribe.
When you're there, be remembering that the amount of papers you get is the amount of people you can inform. So if you want to inform 10 people about what's happening around us and the truth and go against mainstream media, then get 10. But if you want to inform 300 people, make sure you're getting 300 copies.
We are the media, all of us. So that's what it does. The verse of the week, It's seriously about what we were talking about. It's James 2:14-26. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus, also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. So, Anna, how are you, Anna?
I'm so good. I'm so good.
What have you been learning about this week?
Oh, my. Really, this verse just reminds me, you know, that you have to walk out. You have to walk the talk, right? You can't just say something. You can't just look at somebody and be like, oh, okay, yeah, this is happening. I'll pray about it. I mean, prayer is our number one weapon for sure. But we also have to be active, right? God, this week has actually been crazy. After our Jill Noble podcast and the tent revivals this week, there's definitely, you know, the gates of heaven have been opened. And
amen.
For some reason, I laugh. Nicole and I got together yesterday and she's so funny because sometimes she just gets going and she's like, I just feel like I'm Martha and you're Mary. Like, I've been finishing up this paper this month and just working, you know, biting my nails and just getting it done. And you're just like sitting at the feet of God, right? Like, oh, I praise you, Lord. Because I've been at these tent revivals, I mean, hours and hours and hours.
And you were
on
2 weeks of vacation.
And I was on 2 weeks of vacation, right? And so I kind of laughed. I mean, it was funny the way she said it because that was actually exactly how the week went. But in that, when we walk things out, then we're blessed, right? We also have the opportunity to be at meetings and have candidates speaking about, you know, one of the worst things that's happening right now and the biggest threats we have is mainstream media. And I, you know, I'm sitting there listening and I'm like, all right, so what are we going to do about it? Like, it's awesome that you say that and you recognize it, but what are we going to do about it? Because I know here at The Flame, we're ready. It takes all of us working together. Like we said at the beginning, like if you see something, say something, and you need to bring it to us, because guess what? We're going to share it. We're not going to censor it. We're going to put it out there. So if you want change, then you got to be the change. If you accept mediocrity, then that's what you're going to get, right? So,
and Anna word.
An Anna word, yeah. I make
my
up
wife
words.
Accuses me of making up words all the time.
Yeah, you
I
and
do
Anna
the same thing.
Are kind of soul.
I mean, hey, I do what we I want. What but I do what I want. Everybody else does what they can, right?
But the point is that that faith without works is dead.
It is.
And so, yeah, send over the video. But, you know, that's where, as I'm sitting there sweating in a third story condo, and the heat is rising. And yes, I've been annoyed by the heat right now because there's no air. But I'm sitting there doing the works, right? So you're so focused when you're in it, you don't even kind of notice the heat, you know? And so you are seriously just doing the work. And we're doing layout for this paper and going to meetings. And Anna works so hard too, so don't let her fool you. But we both work in our ways, you know? And I couldn't do it without her. But the faith part of what we have is the opportunity to change the world. And people don't know. This podcast goes a little deeper. So our paper draws people into this podcast. Our platform
again,
draws.
The podcast is awesome because it can be shared with people you have their information for already.
Yeah.
But the paper reaches strangers and
the movable middle.
Exactly.
So they're going to see in August about Berks. And so everybody has the opportunity to subscribe. Everybody could cut out that one fast food meal or Netflix or whatever. And I'm not nagging because we want you to be a part of and feel that this is a really, you know, big mission. And we need 25,000 subscriptions to literally change the country, because
right.
What we can do with that is not just get papers into every corner of America by people subscribing. We could help fund medical clinics where they don't do vaccines. We could help alternate schools. We could do so much because we're a nonprofit. We're set up as a private membership association and a nonprofit. So this week, the urgency of our mission and faith without works is dead, and how to incorporate people to get excited about this mission.
Well, and for them to realize, too, it's not about Nicole and I. It's not about Steve. It's about all of us. And what we're doing is for everyone. Like, you are involved. We need you.
We need you
to be activated and be on our team. We need you. I mean, we need the dream team, right?
Share the show with 10 friends. Share the newspaper with 10 friends.
Yeah. If you're done with mainstream media, if you think to yourself, like, what is happening? This is upside down world. Stop playing their game and be the change.
And we don't, unlike some, Epoch Times is a great publication, but it has some huge funding behind it. If you do a little research, they launched it. There are some very, very wealthy individuals who launched it. That's not the case with The Flame.
A grandma and a mom.
It's a grandma and a mom. and whoever wishes to subscribe and or support. And I just want to say, it's about answers. You know, this show is not just about showing the problem. It's about showing, giving the answers and giving helps.
We have
it is giving the answers, and you know, I
solutions. I should
we
say,
normally I'm we're in studio. My kiddos are here today.
Everybody say hello.
And
everybody
this,
say hello.
You guys come here. Come say hello.
Okay.
Hello.
All right, so we're getting
one's them. Asleep.
One's asleep.
But this is what we're fighting for. We're fighting for our children, and
your children
and your children. Absolutely. So let's all do this
it
together.
Woo-hoo! Share this and share this out.
All right, so we are nearing the end of our show today, and we do want to thank everyone for listening to The Flame Podcast. We want to thank Matt Larkin and Scott Stevenson for coming on with us. And if you like what we're doing, we can use your financial support to keep us going, so you can make your donations at theflameusa.com. So as we like to say, I'm Anna Kane.
I'm Nicola Roscoe.
And I'm Steve, the producer. Johan reminding you to keep your tinder dry, your torch lit, as together with God's help, we're spreading the truth like wildfire.
Woo!
Am I brave enough? Am I strong enough to follow the desire that burns from within, to push away my fear? day.